From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
I don't think you ever have to really idolize, I guess, what society tells us is beautiful. You can see beauty in everyone.
What is beauty? For some people, it means wearing makeup, which might be harmful for you.
You're used to using so many products that you don't really think have an effect on you. We kind of unmasked that a little bit. The true effects of the products was really astonishing.
For others, beauty is all about confidence.
I was blown away by everything that I saw, so boisterous and so opinionated and all so different, but all the same, and I felt right at home.
On our show today, YouTube makeup gurus, teenage researchers, and a star of gay ballroom culture, and mucho más. Coming up on Latino USA, I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. Hey, everyone. Thanks for taking the time to listen to Latino USA. We really appreciate it. Now, for musical games, puzzles, and trivia of all sorts right now, why don't you check out Ask Me Another? Like, you know, can you do math at the movies or name commercial jingles that are sung in Italian? Well, Ask Me Another is like trivia night, but a lot funnier. Play along now at npr.org/podcasts or on the NPR One app. Welcome to Latino USA, everyone. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
Everyone has their own beauty, and there's beauty in everything. It just depends how you look at it. I think everyone has their unique look.
Beauty can be defined in many ways. So for today's show, we wanted to hear from real people about belleza. So I went to La Marina, which is one of New York City's most stylish bars, to ask Latinos how they define beauty.
You know, beauty is anything that's attractive to you. It doesn't matter what it is. If it's beautiful and it's attractive to you, you want to have it. It could be a painting. You know, you could see beauty in a plant. You could see beauty in a flower. You could see beauty in a woman.
When I go out on the street, I have so many people be like, oh my God, you're so beautiful. And I don't see that. They see so much more in me that I don't see in me. But at the end of the day, it's like, you just have to look in the mirror and see your beauty for yourself.
Actually, if I see someone that's beautiful, it doesn't mean anything until I get to know them. It's all in the mind, the spirit, the personality. And what attracts me to them is, you know, what I'm looking for. It's like drive and, you know, confidence and what makes them happy.
Yo camino en el mundo sintiéndome bella. Todo el mundo tiene cosas bonitas y cosas bellas. Yo me considero una mujer preciosa, bella.
You know, as an adult, as I've gotten older and grown into myself, I feel a lot more confident, and I feel that, you know, that the definition of beauty changes depending on obviously who you speak to and who you're talking to, but it's universal. You know?
It's about having that confidence that you can achieve anything you want to achieve. I eat healthy because you are what you eat, what you consume. So I like to keep my inner self beautiful, which in turn makes my outer self more beautiful.
I gotta say, I was happily surprised by how much self-love was going on here. And it all seemed to come back to confidence. Confidence in yourself and in what you choose to see in the mirror.
I still put on makeup because I feel like makeup makes me feel beautiful. And I feel like makeup is my art. Makeup is the way that I can express myself and feel good and show other people, I don't know, like my makeup skills. I feel like it makes me feel beautiful.
But making that makeup look good, well, that's a lot harder. Over the last few years, though, YouTube has become the dominant source for beauty tips and makeup how-to videos, especially for young women. In fact, did you know that beauty videos are the most searched for how-to videos on YouTube. Together, they get about 700 million views per month. That's more than twice the population of the United States. In fact, entire conventions like BeautyCon have been created in response to this growing market. One of our interns, 21-year-old Pauly Dinetclaw, has been exploring the beauty guru community on YouTube for quite some time. Pauly, you actually say that you are a self-described YouTube addict. Oh, my God.
yes, I do.
So what does it mean to be a YouTube addict, right? Because I didn't grow up with that term. So what does that mean?
So basically, I spend at least an hour a day, maybe more, but at least an hour watching videos on YouTube. And in particular, I watch makeup tutorials.
And you're okay with saying you're a YouTube addict?
Yeah, I am. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous how much time I spend on YouTube. I think even before I get out of bed, I'm watching a YouTube video.
So do you remember the first time you saw YouTube and why you think that you connected so profoundly with it?
Well, the first makeup tutorial that I ever watched was from Bubs Beauty.
Everybody, it's Bubs. It's a beautiful, beautiful Friday.
And she's a Chinese YouTuber. But I watched this tutorial of her doing her eyeshadow. And immediately, I was like, we have the same eye shape. And so it was easier for me to do eye looks because we have the same slanted eyes.
You know, I mean, I was just kind of thinking in my mind, like, you know, when you think of like makeup, the women who immediately popped into my mind were all white.
Yeah.
Right? With these like perfect eyes that there's like a tremendous amount of space. And that's
exactly
what you see kind of like on mainstream media. But YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube is this really unique space where if you seek it out, you can usually find it. But because I'm Native American and there aren't many Native American YouTubers at all, I usually turn to like Latina YouTubers, and one of them happens to be Natalie Elzate from Natalie's Outlet.
Hello, I'm Natalie, and today's video is going to be a insert caption title right here.
And she's Colombian, and the reason why I connect with her is because, one, she's a college student, two, she looks similar to me in that we're both like brown, we both have straight black hair. So anything that she produces, I know I can recreate.
She actually looks Native American. Like, if you didn't know, like on the one that you and I just watched where she was doing the green smoky eye.
Oh, yeah, the one with all the sound effects.
It is a smoky green eye look. You can look like
she looks very Native American. She looks very indigenous. And I think that's why I gravitate towards her most. That's why she's my favorite.
So what is your love about makeup?
What I love best about makeup and what I enjoy most about it is it's my space for me. I know that every morning when I'm getting ready, that's time where it's just for me and it's not for anybody else. And a lot of the times we get caught up, especially within the YouTube community, get caught up in this conversation of, well, why are you wearing makeup? Are you wearing it because you don't feel confident? Are you wearing it because you want attention from other people? And what are the intentions of your makeup application? Why do you do it? And I actually got to talk to Natalie about this.
Nowadays online, you definitely see a lot of makeup shaming where girls are calling up other girls, maybe you're wearing too much makeup, and just saying a whole bunch of horrendous things. But makeup, like I said, it's just an enhancement. It's a form of art.
And so I've thought a lot about that because I don't want to wear makeup as a mask. That's not the reason why I wear makeup, and I'm very conscious of that. And so I make sure that when I'm starting to feel like I can't leave the house without makeup, that I take it off and I don't wear makeup for 3 or 4 days until I feel like, yes, I'm confident in who I am again. I'm confident in my own, like with my own reflection. And so I have to be like on top of that all the time.
So you're kind of like, you're recognizing that you could become addicted to makeup in and of itself, but you're having the self-critical, which is, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
It's really interesting because when you look at beauty gurus, they're always pushing this message of like self-love, self-confidence, like be proud of who you are. And
I love my little nose that I've hated my whole life.
Appreciate and like and love how you look with and without makeup. It's as simple as that.
And I also want to stress, I've always liked my kind of rhinish face. Rhine-based girls tend to look more youthful and innocent.
I'm not ashamed of going out barefaced, ever.
You know, these are things that I don't like about myself, but I still love them anyways. And they'll make whole videos dedicated to that. But then at the same time, they'll be making a video and they'll be like, I'm not wearing makeup, please don't judge me.
I mean, like, I look crazy right now. It's not my cutest day, obviously.
She's not wearing makeup. She says she makes a point about it, but she actually looks drop-dead gorgeous.
She's beautiful, but she makes it a point to say, I'm not wearing makeup and I look hideous.
Yeah, I'm not cute.
Yeah.
Wow, so it's a totally mixed message.
Yeah, it's completely mixed.
Right, so on the one hand, they're saying self-love, you got to enjoy who you are. But on the other hand, they're saying, here's a way that you can change the way your face looks.
So Jaclyn Hill is this huge YouTuber. She just worked with this makeup company called Becca Cosmetics and made her own product with them. And she's beautiful.
Well, hello. Let's transform this mess, shall we? Okay, let's get started.
Whoa. Now, you know what? I have to say, I'm sure I've said something similar. Like, you know what? What is going on here with this face when I've sat down at a makeup chair? But what you're actually making me think about is, oh, my God, I may have said that in jokes or in a passing, but if my daughter heard that, then that's what I was saying to her.
I have a niece, and she's 15. And I try to tell her that she doesn't need makeup to be beautiful. And it's this really interesting space because she sees me wearing makeup all the time. And I'm always posting selfies on Snapchat and Instagram and Facebook with me only in makeup. Those are the only photos that I post. I'm scared about what that message does send to her.
What do you do with that?
I make sure she knows that there are ways that you can wear makeup and the ways that you should wear makeup, but there are other ways that you shouldn't. And using it as a mask to cover up what you see as imperfections is not the way to wear makeup, because it doesn't make you feel good. It's just a cover up. It's a Band-Aid over the real issue of you not feeling confident in how you look and not feeling confident in your own skin.
Polly, thanks so much for talking with me and also for just thinking about this stuff and putting it out there. I mean, it's rare that you hear a Native American woman talking about these issues. So I'm really happy that you went there and that you made me think about my own makeup in a very different way. So thanks, Polly.
Thank you, Maria. I really appreciate it.
Next on Latino USA.
As the tattoo progressed and I started to see the removal process, I started to realize that there was a freedom that came along with it.
Tattoo removal that liberates women. Stay with us. No se vayan.
Thank you.
Hey, my dear listeners, before we jump back into our show on beauty or belleza, I have to tell you about a wonderful comment we got from a listener. A Texas listener sent in a $5 donation, and she let us know that she couldn't donate as much as she wanted to, but you know what? Those $5 meant the world to us. It isn't about how much you give everyone. It's about giving and letting us know that you want to help us to tell the stories that move you. So please, if you can, go to latinousa.org and click on the donate button. And if you can't afford to do that, well, just take a moment then to rate and review us on iTunes. Even that helps us to reach new listeners. Thanks, everyone, so much. Muchas gracias.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Lumber Liquidators, a proud sponsor of NPR, offering more than 400 styles, including hardwood, bamboo, laminate, and vinyl, with flooring specialists in hundreds of stores nationwide. More at lumberliquidators.com or 1-800-HARDWOOD. And the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, we're talking about beauty. Mexican-American Nicolas Segura owns a talent agency in his native Kansas called Somos, or We Are. He says that beauty and ethnicity really are in the eye of the beholder. Reporter Peggy Lowe went to find out just what Segura means.
And just smile big for me. These will all be smiling pictures because we're always happy here at Hallmark. And I'll get in real close and pull back a little bit.
Today what we're doing is it's called a go-see. And Hallmark Cards, they hire our models because we exclusively represent ethnic models. And they hire them for cards, for videos, for in-store marketing, corporate marketing materials.
Nicolas Segura is very charming, easy to talk to, a sly smile sitting just under those cool glasses. He's the guy, you know, that guy who seems to be everywhere and knows everyone.
People accuse me. They say, Nicolas, you only hang out with beautiful people. I'm like, that's not true. I hang out with some ugly people as well.
I feel like if you want ethnic talent, you go to Nicolas first. He's got a great roster of people.
That's Ashley Travelant, a Hallmark talent coordinator and the one with the camera. A couple dozen models are scheduled to come in every 7 minutes, a chance to go, so Hallmark can see them. One at a time, the models are lined up, holding their name tag under their chin.
How are you doing?
You're welcome. Thank you. Hello.
Good to see you. How was your quinceañera?
Oh, it was great.
Yeah? Yeah. Good.
Got some great.
I saw some great photos.
Thank you.
All right, she's going to have you right up there.
Oh yeah, Astrid. So let's just come right over here.
My name is Astrid Cifuentes. My mom's name is Griselda Cifuentes. We live in Overland Park, Kansas.
When Astrid first sent me her images, they were just gorgeous images, but she looked like she was 25 to 30. You know, one of the things that we're really trying to do is educate our clients just on the diversity of the Hispanic culture, for example, in our marketing. I think that a lot of people have stereotypes of them as being hypersexual and, you know, very sexy. And we also want to show them that, look, Hispanics, African Americans, Asians all have different looks.
So not everybody has to look like Sofia Vergara.
Exactly.
Good job. And how old are you again, Astrid?
15.
Oh, my goodness, you're so young. But, I mean, you are so photogenic. Love it. Thank you so much.
Yeah. The stereotype in marketing and modeling is that African-Americans marry African-Americans, Asians marry Asians, Hispanics marry Hispanics. Races are intermingling, and they've been doing that for a long time. That's creating a whole new group of beautiful people from different looks, different hairs, different skin tones, freckles. And I think that that's really what we're just trying to promote is just the beauty of diversity. The term that people are using today is racially ambiguous. And we've got models like that.
And let's do a couple smiles with teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Awesome.
My name is Luisa Fernandez. I was born in Dominican Republic, but I grew up here in Kansas City.
Nicolas says he wants to find people who look commercial.
That when you look at them, that a variety of people can look at that person and relate to that person. Luisa is a great example of that. She looks Dominican, Hispanic, a little bit of African American. She represents the racially ambiguous type of model that clients are looking for.
We're constantly bombarded with images of beauty in telenovelas or in magazines, not only from media USA, but also especially Latin American television. I mean, the women that you see all look beautiful and made up, so you kind of have this sense that you have to look like them.
I've seen like LinkedIn profile images that are like way too sexy and provocative of an image. Yeah. And for my model, I'm like, hey, you might want to just change that.
He says he wants them to get headshots that look professional.
I'm trying to get them hired. And I want these women to get jobs looking like students, like professionals, like mothers, like daughters. But if you look too like, you know, sexy or something like that, you're going to cast yourself out of a job.
For Latino USA, I'm Peggy Lowe in Kansas City.
Breaking news, everyone. Latinos love makeup. According to Nielsen, sales of beauty products, everything from cosmetics to soaps and moisturizers, have increased among both Latina women and Latino men, and that's as sales have decreased among other groups in this country. But are cosmetic products safe? Public health researchers at the University of California at Berkeley have been studying adolescent girls' exposure to chemicals in cosmetics, and most of the work that went into this study was done not by seasoned scientists, but by high school students in the farming town of Salinas. Latino USA's California Endowment Fellow, Vanessa Rancaño, brings us the story.
My name is Carolina Mundo.
My name is Carlos Vera. For me, Salinas is...
I was born in Mexico. Where I'm from, it's like all desert. So once I came here, it's like all green. I was like, oh my God, this is beautiful. So I think I wouldn't want to live anywhere else.
Agriculture is a billion-dollar industry here. The town is just surrounded by fields of strawberries and spinach. But more than a fifth of the population is under the federal poverty level.
Salinas has different sides of town. South Salinas is usually the whiter, more educated side. And East Salinas is usually the poor Latino community.
That's where Carlos grew up.
I was really affected by all the violence that surrounded me. There were some instances where there was gangs that would shoot each other. We would be hiding in our houses.
Carlos knew he wanted to do something positive for his community, but he didn't find many opportunities. The chance that did come his way was unexpected. He and a group of local teens started working with researchers from UC Berkeley on a study involving chemicals in cosmetics. The teens first got interested when they watched a video called The Story of Cosmetics.
Less than 20% of chemicals in cosmetics have been assessed for safety by the industry's safety panel.
That freaked Carolina out.
I got really paranoid. I didn't really want to touch any perfume or any, like, my cosmetics.
Of course, not all ingredients in cosmetics are dangerous, but there's evidence that many of the most common ones are. One young researcher, Maritza Cárdenas, says they're especially worried about one type, endocrine disruptors. They can either mimic natural hormones in the body or block hormones, both with possible negative consequences.
When you have too many of these chemicals, it can potentially lead to different diseases, for example, some types of cancers. And using these products doesn't necessarily mean that you will get cancer, but it's just important to be aware that the more exposure that you have to these chemicals, the higher the risk.
The long-term effects of endocrine disruptors are still unclear, but a number of university studies supported by the National Institutes of Health back up the young researchers' concerns. Animal studies show changes in reproductive development linked to cancer. Human studies tie exposure to behavior and neurodevelopment problems in children, and even to obesity and respiratory problems. These chemicals are in all kinds of things: plastics, pesticides, air fresheners, detergents. But some of us are more exposed to them than others, especially when it comes to cosmetics.
What we know is that women tend to have higher levels than men. And that it seems like African-American Latina women may have slightly higher levels than non-Hispanic white women.
That's Kim Harley, director of the UC Berkeley Center for Environmental Research and Children's Health, which spearheaded the study.
We're most concerned about teenage girls because they're the ones that tend to use a lot of these products.
With help from Harley's team, Salinas High School students designed a study focused on exposure to endocrine disruptors among Latina teenagers.
We looked at four different classes of chemicals.
The first is something called phthalates.
And phthalates are used in fragrance.
Then there's parabens,
which are preservative, used in makeup.
Next is triclosan.
Triclosan is an antibacterial agent. So it's in antibacterial hand soap, and it's also in certain brands of toothpaste.
And last, oxybenzone,
which is a sunscreen agent, which studies have shown to be an endocrine disruptor.
The students named their study Hermosa, beautiful. They got paid to recruit 100 girls and have them replace their normal beauty products with low chemical alternatives. They wanted to see if that could lower the amounts of endocrine disruptors in their bodies. For Maritza, who thought that only scientists in white lab coats get to work on real studies, it was a one-of-a-kind chance.
Really awesome, because the youth were the ones who were in charge of this research project, and I had never really heard of high schoolers doing research.
Their biggest challenge was to find safer alternatives in their hometown.
We are at one of the two Walmarts in Salinas.
That's Kimberly Parra, who works at a local clinic and has helped oversee the study.
And we are looking for low chemical products.
She picks up a tube of mascara.
So you see that right there? Methylparaben, ethylparaben, propylparaben.
All endocrine disruptors.
Walking around the aisles, you realize that there isn't that many affordable low chemical alternatives. A very good makeup section just doesn't have what we need, right? Or what we want.
The teen researchers did eventually find replacement products. After the participants used them for just 3 days, the results were impressive, says Maritza. The levels of most chemicals fell by 25 to 50% in the urine samples of the girls who took part in the study.
You're used to using so many products that you don't really think have an effect on you. We kind of unmasked that a little bit. The true effects of the products was really astonishing.
The lead researcher, Kim Harley, says this is the first study to show that changing your beauty regimen can significantly reduce chemical exposure from personal care products. The teen researchers have presented their findings at community meetings and health fairs around Salinas and at a research conference. They also launched a social media campaign featuring do-it-yourself recipes, and they're meeting with state legislators.
The best thing about getting the results back was actually sharing them to the community members.
That's Carlos Vera again, the student researcher who talked about gang violence.
I was happy to see them learn something new and be able to protect themselves.
For Latino USA, I'm Vanessa Rancagno in Salinas, California.
For lots of young people in America today, tattoos have gone mainstream. Many people consider them a sign of beauty. Some people even get them to celebrate relationships by tattooing the name of a lover on their skin. But for some women, their tattoos are no mark of joy because their abusive partners gave them those tattoos by force, like a perverse form of branding. Dawn Maestas endured years of emotional and physical abuse before she broke free. Now, she helps survivors of domestic abuse in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by removing their tattoos to help them move past their trauma.
How are you doing? Okay? Okay. If you get uncomfortable, raise this hand because it's really hard for me to hear you when I'm back here. So just raise it and we'll take a break, okay?
So my name is Dawn Maestas. I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I am in my 40-somethings. Still feel like a kid, though. It takes everything I have in me not to ride the shopping cart out in the parking lot. But I was a victim of domestic violence up until in my very late 20s. It took such a physical and mental toll on me. Like I tell everybody, I'd choose being broken any day, because I'm so distinctive compared to anyone else. And I earned every one of those cracks. And I've somehow managed to pull all these cracks and be the glue that holds them together. So that says a lot.
you know, when I was about 34, 35, it was the very first time in my entire life where I thought, who do I want to be? How am I going to make a living? I never had that opportunity before because it was always, how am I going to get through today without being killed or getting beat up? I decided to go into aesthetics because I always liked skin. I always liked messing with skin and anything that had to do with it. And honestly, it was to get through school very quickly to learn a trade because so much of my life was already gone. I had used my tattoo on my hand as a way to practice tattoo removal because it was, you know, it was on my left hand. I could work on it with my right. It was very visible, easy for me to see what I was doing. And then as the tattoo progressed and I started to see the removal process, I started to realize that there was a freedom that came along with it, this feeling that this person was somehow starting to disappear, that he didn't really have a hold on me anymore. And I hadn't realized how much that tattoo affected me. And so when I had this first woman come in that I helped, I wanted to offer her that because I knew what that feeling was. I thought, surely this is the only one. There can only be one or two others out there like me and like her. And then when the phone calls started coming in and I started seeing how many women were in the same situation and how it started to grow and what an effect it had on their life, it was just something that made sense.
So my name is Leticia Sanchez. I'm from Laguna Pueblo. It's a reservation about 60 miles west of Albuquerque. When I was 14, I was still a freshman in high school, kind of trying to fit in, find my identity, discover the world, so to say. And I got involved with somebody who was very different, very dynamic, very controlling. We ran away from high school, and we ended up homeless on the streets in Albuquerque. Somebody who said was his friend said, hey, you guys can crash here. We had an apartment and went there, got in a fight with my boyfriend at the time because I wanted to leave. He wouldn't let me leave, blocking the door. I got knocked out, woke up, felt very sharp pain in my neck. I got knocked out again. From what I remember, there were a couple people just holding me down, and all I could feel was just a sharp pain in my neck, and I didn't know what it was from. I woke up, my neck was hurting, I went to the restroom, I was naked, there were five other guys around me, I felt so disgusted, I got in the shower and I cried, water hit my neck and it was hurting so bad. I looked in the mirror when I got out, I saw my boyfriend's name on my neck. And they actually recorded everything on a little video camera and made me rewatch it in the living room with everybody that was there. And it was just one of the most uncomfortable situations I've ever been in.
The reason that they got the color that they did was because it was melted plastic. So hers is tough because it's not ink. It was never formulated to be in the skin. It should have never been in there. It's a whole different substance.
It has taken about a year and a half, 2 years, and I have just completed my final session today. So that's very exciting. It's sort of like being reborn. Donna's giving me such a different outlook on life. Before I came, it was just like, okay, this is always going to be there until I find a very steady job and can afford something very expensive to get this off. And Dawn, out of the kindness of her heart, did it for free. So when I look in the mirror, it's like, I'll be 13. It's like everything's going to be different. It's been a little difficult because my son asks me, he'll ask, what is this? What is this? And it's like, it's nothing, baby. And in a couple months from now, he won't have to ask anymore.
Our piece was produced by Megan Kamerick in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Acuérdate de Acapulco, de aquellas noches.
Coming up on Latino USA.
Back then it was a very underground thing. I mean, they went on at 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning, when the rest of New York City was sleeping.
A legend of New York City's beautiful gay ballroom scene. Stay with us. No se vayan. Hey, everyone. Thanks for taking the time to listen to Latino USA. We really appreciate it. Now, for musical games, puzzles, and trivia of all sorts right now, why don't you check out Ask Me Another? Like, You know, can you do math at the movies or name commercial jingles that are sung in Italian? Well, Ask Me Another is like Trivia Night, but a lot funnier. Play along now at npr.org/podcasts or on the NPR One app.
Soy, 10 sexy que mi amor, 10 sexy que mi amor va abandonarme.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness and efforts to strengthen policies and practices that open the doors to employment opportunities for everyone. More at MelvilleTrust.org. And the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, working to improve the quality of people's lives by supporting the performing arts, the environment, medical research, and child well-being. Information is available at ddcf.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And today, we've been talking about what beauty means to different people. And earlier in our show, we heard from New York Latinos about what they think about beauty. Now we go to L.A., to the Lolita Beauty Salon, to hear what people on the West Coast have to say about beauty.
It's just like once a month to pamper myself, to have my own time, my me time.
Yeah. You look good, you feel better.
I'm 48.
I'm Hispanic, 32 years old.
50.
48.
I think I look, I don't know. I look human.
I feel beautiful inside, but I still want to look beautiful outside.
I say I go natural. I just need a haircut. I don't need all that other stuff.
It's not necessarily what I wear. It's the attitude I have.
Beauty sells. So, not a lot of makeup, actually. It's scary once they take it off.
Feeling good about yourself and other people, the way they look at you. I mean, I don't want my gray hair all over. My son keeps asking me, when are you going to get your hair done? When are you going to get hair done?
I think people come here because they need to, like, they can't handle the heat, so they come and get their hair cut. Women, I think it's just, like, the whole, they don't want to, like, look old, so they come and get, cover the gray hair.
You know, it's in the eye of the beholder.
I think it's not just the procedure, but I think it's also, like, the talking to people, you know? I don't know, get away from day-to-day life.
I'm getting my roots done. I really needed them.
It's a plastic cap in my hair. I'll be there for 45 minutes. Is fully cooked, and then I'll be ready to go.
Well, it all depends on what you're doing in life. If you got to go, you know, if it's going to take you 2 hours to get ready, that's a lot of time from your life. Yeah, you can't live for everybody else, though. You got to live for yourself. What makes you happy?
Sometimes things are beautiful naturally, and sometimes we have to do something to make it beautiful.
Voguing is an urban dance that was done in the underground clubs of New York City back in the early 80s, late 70s. And it was more of a series of poses that stuck to its tradition.
Vogue, the dance, has influenced everyone from Chris Brown to Beyoncé. But voguing actually emerged from Manhattan's black and brown gay nightlife. and it hit the mainstream in 1990 when Madonna released her single. And the accompanying music video. The song turned 25 this year, but the culture that inspired it stretches back much, much farther than that. Producer Julia Alsop brings us this story about one of the OG Vogers and the scene, both then and now.
One staple of gay life in 1950s and 60s New York were elaborate drag competitions. Drag queens strutted before judges, just like in beauty pageants. But these spaces were mostly white. If queens of color did show up, they were expected to whiten their faces, and they almost never won. There's a 1968 documentary called The Queen. It follows a drag competition.
Our third runner-up in the 1967 Nationals.
This scene shows the African-American drag queen Crystal Abeja reacting to being named third runner-up against the white, blonde Queen Harlow.
She said, Crystal, darling, don't go, because you're not going to get it. And that's why all the true beauties didn't come.
Fed up with a white stand as a beauty in New York's downtown drag scene, a welfare office worker and drag queen named Lottie decided to host her own big, glamorous gay event. It would be a ball, with music, dancing, and elaborate costumes. And so, in 1972, the first uptown ball was thrown. Not to be outdone, other drag queens followed suit, hosting their own balls and forming houses. Named after fashion labels like the House of Dior or the House of Chanel, these houses were loose collectives of artists, DJs, and dancers, and they would become nightlife institutions.
My name is Jose Gutierrez. That is my name, and I am 43 years old. Don't tell anybody. And I am the father of the House of Extravaganza.
Unlike the fashion lines they emulate, these houses are like family, with mothers, fathers, and children.
I came into the house as a child, and I've been in it ever since. And at that time, it was the founding fathers, was Hector Extravaganza, and Angie also, who was the mother.
Jose describes his first ball way back when he was in junior high in the early 80s.
Back then, it was a very underground thing. I mean, they went on at 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning, when the rest of New York City was sleeping. You know, you would be getting ready to go to a ball. I was maybe 15, 16 years old, and I snuck out of the house to go to the ball, I remember. And I was blown away by everything that I saw, so boisterous and so opinionated and all so different, but all the same, and I felt right at home.
As a kid, Jose studied ballet professionally.
The plan was to go right into the company as an apprentice.
But the gods of New York City nightlife had other plans and led him to the reigning queen of pop.
I was maybe 18 or just turned 17, 18 years old, and there was this nightclub that we attended as a house named Sound Factory, and I was very good friends with her hairstylist, who's an actress on now Debbie Mazar. So I would see her and she said, hey, I told Madonna about you, she would say, and she's going on tour, she's looking for dancers, and I told her about this thing that you guys do and pa pa pa. Around comes this tour, she was already a star. And she came to the Sound Factory one night, and Debbie brought her to me. I couldn't believe my eyes, you know? She was dressed like in a long trench coat. It was like, and her hair was up in a newspaper boy's hat. You know, her hair was tucked into it. So it didn't look like her, is what I'm trying to say.
Just to be clear, he's talking about Madonna.
And once I looked up and, you know, and I saw her and I'm like, oh my God, this is really this woman. And I saw the bodyguards and, you know, lingering about in the crowd. And she's like, hey, I heard about you and I'm going on a world tour and I want to see what you do. I wasn't dressed to dance. I mean, I was always very into fashion. I had some type of pant that was a bit constricting. And she made one of the people in her entourage, go into the bathroom and give me his slacks. I want to say that it was a bodyguard. And I remember she stood there while I changed my pants. She didn't excuse herself. And I was blown away by that. Of course, me being the exhibition as I was, I didn't mind stripping in front of her.
Runway as a house. Runway as a house.
We danced for her that night. The whole club turned into like a open call once everyone was aware that she was in the building.
Bring it to the runway.
One thing led to another, and she invited me to the audition. It was wow, I couldn't believe that I got the gig.
Madonna brought Jose and host member Luis Extravaganza on tour with her. You can see them dancing in her Vogue music video.
I was a sophomore. You know, I didn't get to finish my schooling till much later. I said, I'm going to go be famous with this woman. Of course, I sometimes think now that, damn, I should have just joined a dance company like I was scheduled to. And not that I regret anything as far as Madonna and going on tour and traveling the world, but I was so young, you know? I think that if I would have been a bit older, things would have been slightly different.
Not everyone was happy about Vogue's big debut. Madonna's use of this underground culture created controversy in the ballroom scene.
My name is Jimmy Wong. I've been participating in the ballroom scene for maybe like 12, 13 years now. I wasn't really active when Madonna's Vogue came out. But when I come to think about it now, I kind of resent it a little bit. With Vogue and with our scene in general, I feel like a lot of people come in. They use our platform to elevate themselves, but they never really fully follow through. And I think they give us props, but, like, you know, come through and, you know, really show support. Like, Beyonce, you have Snap for the Kids in a couple of your songs, but you never went to a ball.
It's a double-edged sword. I mean, every other pop artist is doing a version of it. And for me, I just wish that it would be respected more as a dance form, like ballet, like modern.
If you've never seen Vogue, like real Vogue, you should totally look it up on YouTube. It's a highly elaborate dance featuring sharp and exacting movements. Like all dances, it's a language unto itself, and it is stunning.
I mean, people pay, you know, money to go to the Met to see the ballet and or to the theater, period, to go see a piece of work created by the greats. I would love for voguing one day soon to be respected, where people will go to the theater house and see a production put on of, you know, Shakespeare, Vogue, Hamlet, but the Vogue version of Hamlet or whatever, you know? Yeah, like something like that, you know?
These days, Jose teaches Vogue around the world to professional models, dancers, and to his house children.
Being in a house is like being in a sorority and everybody kind of knows each other, everybody's family. My name is Angie Extravaganza. Well, Angeline Gonzalez, and my stage name is Angie Extravaganza. Growing up, I always felt different from everyone else. So it wasn't until I actually met the House of Extravaganza and I was able to meet people that had the same issues as me, and I was able to come forward with the fact that, you know, I'm not a boy, I'm transgender.
A lot of times parents throw kids out into the street and are embarrassed, and kids sometimes are suicidal and just feel like they're nothing.
I would define Father Jose. He's just an all-around amazing person. He is very helpful. He's always willing to give advice, and he is always there when you need him.
If nothing else, I've done good within this community, and I have these people looking up to me. So if I don't have the riches and I'm not the most famous in the world, I can say that at least I left this legacy behind.
His responsibility to young people like Angie comes from his relationship with his original house mother, Angie, and all the losses he experienced.
The AIDS epidemic was really hitting, you know, home, so to speak. And I remember Angie saying if it ever came to that, I was, you know, she was really ill. And I hated talking about these things. And it was a lot of pressure for me to have her and hear her say in the presence of other members that aren't no longer here. You know, very few of us are left from that time. And to hear her say, look, I want you to promise me never to let this die, you know? And that for me, I could never let this die. I could never, you know? And I promised her that I would always make this live forever, you know? So, yeah, so it's something that I promised to never, ever let let die, to make sure that it lives forever. And I'm going to do that. And, like, I promised that I would.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Our story was produced by Julia Alsop.
You know, sometimes, baby, I'm so carefree. With a joy that's hard to hide. And then sometimes again it seems that all I have is worry. And then you're bound to see my other side. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. If you see me edgy, I want you to.
So, my dear listeners, there are lots of ideas about what beauty is. But for 29-year-old Asher Diaz, being beautiful has meant very different things. In fact, almost opposite things throughout his life. That's because he spent most of it learning how to be a beautiful woman, until 5 years ago when he transitioned. For our sabiduría, or words of wisdom, here's Asher Diaz on beauty, gender, and hair.
I come from a particularly, well, hairy Puerto Rican family. Everyone's got body hair in places they've been told they shouldn't. None of the women in my family seem to embrace their upper lip hair or uniting eyebrows as some radical statement, a la Frida Kahlo. Body hair is public enemy number one. Whatever it takes to eradicate those unwanted follicles, waxing, nair, plucking, electrolysis, must be done. And if you got one or two whiskers coming out of your chin, you pluck, 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 and never tell a soul. Well, maybe just your tia for guidance. I live my life now as a transgender man. For me, this means I was born female and physically and legally transitioned to male in my mid-20s. I had a whole 20-some years to be taught what it meant to be beautiful as a woman in my family. And with the exception of a fabulous hairstyle, that meant being hairless. My maternal grandparents had 6 children, and I often claim the 7th spot as they helped raise me. One of those children, my Aunt Maricel, had her own makeshift salon in the basement bathroom of our West Cleveland home. Hair by Mare, she called it. She dyed her sister's hair and provided haircuts for her 3 brothers, as they were the only souls brave enough to take a seat in her salon chair and end up with a slightly uneven haircut. Today, everyone still asks Maricel for a haircut or help picking out the right hair dye. With my mother mostly out of the picture, battling her demons with addiction, it was Aunt Maricel who took over the reins of teaching me the secret regimen of feminine beauty. When I was 3, Maricel would wrestle me into a frilly Easter dress while I kicked and screamed. She'd chase me around my grandparents' house with her curling iron in hand. I'd hide in the corner, wailing, "But I'm a boy!" This childhood proclamation left my family baffled for years. As a child, Legos and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were my favorite toys. But I did have a brief foray into the world of Barbies. Mostly, I became obsessed with my shaving Ken doll. He came with a 6 o'clock shadow that disappeared when you used the mini sponge-like shaver with hot water against his plastic chiseled jaw. I named him Oscar after the boxer, Oscar De La Hoya. Once puberty hit, though, Maricel was often the first person I turned to for help with hair removal, makeup tutorials, or picking out a prom dress. No longer was I running and hiding from her curling iron. As a teenage girl, my hair removal required serious expertise. When I was 24, Maricel and I sat down in her basement office, and I nervously shared with her that I was transgender. She wasn't nearly surprised as I anticipated. My childhood proclamations and fear of her curling iron seemed to fall into place. When I returned home for the first time since beginning my gender transition, with unruly whiskers sprouting from my chin, no longer did Maricel reach for her tweezers. Instead, she handed me the beard trimmer. We went through family photos together, and stumbled across a faded photo of toddler me crying in the corner, stuffed in my Easter dress, avoiding her curling iron at all costs. Then, looking at photos of my grandfather when he was my age, she was quick to point out the similarities in our thick hair as her way of letting me know she saw me as a man. As I moved along the gender spectrum from one end to the other, my beauty routine shifted as well. I began to pay closer attention, studying the rituals of hair maintenance among the men in my family, their shaving techniques, and the frequency of their trips to the barber shop. I quickly learned that finding the right barber was much like dating. It could take years to find the right one. Papa Juan and Uncle Randy prefer their hair short and faces clean-shaven. Uncle Al continues to sport a full beard. And Uncle Ronnie has maintained his mustache and hair-by-mare haircut for 3 decades. Nowadays, I see the same barber every 2 weeks to keep my fade fresh and beard neatly trimmed. And if the occasion so arose, I like to think I'd even be brave enough to sit in my aunt's hair-by-mare salon chair for one of our slightly uneven haircuts.
Latino USA contributor Asher Diaz, who lives and works in Chicago at DePaul University. And that's it for this week. Latino USA is produced by Daisy Rosario, Lita Hartman, Marlon Bishop, Michael Simon Johnson, Camilo Vargas, Antonia Cerejido, and Julia Alsop. Our engineer is Cornelius McMoyler. Nadia Raymond is our music consultant. Our Latino USA interns are Gabriela Sierra Alonso, Isabel Riofrio, Polly Dinette Claw, and Nomin Ujiadine. Our futuro interns are Sayer Devlin, Francesca Santana, and Madeline Johnson, who we say goodbye to this week. Nancy Trujillo makes it all happen. Special thanks to Jenny Ahmet in Los Angeles. Our show was founded at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week, and in the meantime, look for us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr, and I'll see you on Instagram. Hasta la próxima.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation and the Ford Foundation, dedicated to working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide.
I'm so bad at this.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Carnegie Corporation of New York, supporting innovations in education, democratic engagement, and the advancement of international peace and security. More information is available online at carnegie.org. And Americans for the Arts, for more than half a century committed to building better communities and better lives through the arts, in partnership with local, state, and national leaders. Learn more at americansforthearts.org. This is NPR.